Welcome to Spark Your Fire podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Now, here's your host, Jazz and David. But before that, let's listen to the quote of the week.
You can't have a standard education and expect to have an extraordinary life. It's not going to happen. The one breakthrough for all leaders is constant, never-ending improvement. And that means educating yourself and continuing to develop even greater emotional mastery, because that's what affects whether you execute or not. The opportunity for self-education is there. We have to change our psychology from, I'm going to do what everybody else does, and I'm mad because it doesn't work anymore, to the reality is, this is the greatest time to be alive if you're growing, you're learning, you're educating, and you're developing valuable skill.
G'day everyone, welcome back to another episode of Spark Your Fire. I'm your host David Shee, and as always we've got our lovely host in Melbourne. Currently it doesn't look like he's in lockdown, but he's doing very, very well. You know, he's still presentable, so I'm assuming he's not in lockdown. But Jazz, how are you doing up there?
Sorry, David, I forgot to wear my clothes, mate, today.
We're not publishing video on this one, mate, that's for sure. So so we've got Nathan Prasad from Envision Property Buyers Agent today with us. Nathan, welcome on the show.
Thanks, David. Thanks for having me.
So, look, we want to uncover your property investment story today, because I know that's what basically everyone's excited and interested about. You know, a lot of our listeners on this show are looking at typical mum and dads, basically looking at branching out, you know, looking at investing, or, you know, their early 20s, 30s, looking at basically expanding their property portfolio, okay? So I reckon you being an investor yourself, if you can provide any kind of advice here, and that's going to be able to help them from, based on your experience, you know, what you have done differently, that kind of stuff would be really helpful. So that's what we would like to cover today. But to start off with, I guess, what made you start wanting to invest in property?
If I go back, sort of my parents sort of split up from a younger age, from six, and then from six to 11, you know, we were moving from house to house. So we moved about five times. And, you know, up till the age of 13, we never really had any money or any, like, we didn't even own a car. So from a very young age, I was always driven to try to take control of my life. You know, this is over in New Zealand. So then by the age of 13, I came to Australia for a holiday, and then my grandparents let me live here. And then, you know, came to Brisbane. It's a big world, but, you know, there's so much opportunity here. I just had to pick a vehicle to make money. So I found property as the vehicle, because it's so tangible. You know, it's pretty straightforward, and it's not as volatile as a share market, and you don't need as much money to get in. So the entry point is not as hard in regards to leverage. So, you know, coming from a bit of a poorer background, that really drove me to want to build my wealth. So I from sort of, I started getting a job, I started saving. Yep. So that by the time I was 19, I had enough to buy my first property. And everyone kind of knows your first property is pretty much your investment property. It's the thing you're going to leverage off. But when I went to go buy my first property, I made a lot of mistakes. As I was saying, like my mum, my family, they've never bought property, so I had nobody to guide me. But through those mistakes, you know, I built a lot of skills, and today I kind of want to share some of the mistakes I made. Mm-hmm. So then other investors don't make the same.
Oh, 100%. I think that's a great story. So when did you start your first job? You mentioned you save up to you save up a sizable deposit up when you were 19. But what was your first job, and when did you start?
So working. It's crazy. I started in construction as an estimator, so a trainee estimator. So I was working at how much it cost to build properties.
Yep.
Which has helped now later on down the track. But yeah, I'd done a traineeship as a building estimator, and then I finished the traineeship and got advanced diploma in building construction, and then went and started working for bigger building companies. And that was what a building estimator is simply somebody finds a block of land. I then work out how much it costs to put a house on it. Mm-hmm. So looking at like the retaining, You got to look at the slope, you know, what's the soil like, looking at all that data to work out how much it will cost to put this property on there. And then once we work out that, I had to work out, you know, sort of, they might want to put a fireplace in there. So then all the components, all the trades that are involved, had to work out a price and then give that to the owner. So I enjoyed that role while I was doing it. But then the reason why I changed role was I just got over sitting in an office from sort of 8 o'clock till 7 at night.
What age did you bought your first property at, Nathan?
So I bought my first property at 20.
20.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was able to, I finally got to the point where I had enough deposit, and then that's when it had to come into strategy in regards to financing as well. I had to do some creative financing to get my first property because it was tricky back then, and that was 2014. It's even harder now, I couldn't imagine, for investors. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if you want to go into that how I got the finance.
Did you seek out help from anyone? Because at the time, obviously, knowledge sources like these podcasts and other stuff were not that easily available. So what was your, where did you seek out the knowledge from? Or did you just spend any, mini money more to purchase the first one like most of us do?
Yeah, and that was one of the first mistakes, just to get into it. I just went to the suburb that I was renting in. That's where I brought my first property. And for advice, I really didn't have any. I had a mortgage broker who helped me get the finance, but he wasn't really savvy on investing. His job was really just to make sure I got the finance. So a lot of the way that I worked it out was purely just really just winging it, to be honest. Like yeah. I just really wanted to buy my first property, and I didn't do any of the, you know, I didn't do any sort of research before I went and bought it.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest.
So this was an investment property or your PPOR?
It was my primary residence, but it was I was looking at it from an investment point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I didn't have any advice. It was once I bought the property, I started seeking knowledge because I realized I made a mistake.
Right. Okay. So do you mind telling us where was this property in? I'm assuming it was in Brisbane.
Yes, this property was in a suburb called Boronia Heights.
Mm-hmm. That's in Loganshire. Yep.
Yeah, just in Logan.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And what was the purchase price like?
So I managed to purchase it for $400,000, and right. The medium house price there at the time was $320,000. So I brought one of the most expensive properties in the suburb, which is mistake number one.
Did it come with like pools and all that luxury facilities, mate, given the fact that you overpaid?
That's what jacuzzi. Sold me. I got emotional. You know, that's the second.
Okay.
So
yeah.
The real estate agent, you know, I went to this open home and I was only meant to get a 3-bedroom, 1-bath, which was within my budget. But then the agent said, no, come along, come check out this property. I've got one. So he done a private inspection. He took me to this property just up the road. I had a 4-bedroom, 2-bath at the front, but then it had a pool and a granny flat in the backyard. I instantly fell in love.
Tick the emotional boxes and you went in and you go, this is going to be my dream home. I'm going to live in there. I'm going to make some money out of the granny flat at the back. So, yeah. You know, why not?
I was just like putty for the real estate agent.
So what happened after that? Did you continue making purchases or give us a little bit more insight into your portfolio?
So from there, I was stuck in that property. In regards to leverage, there was no other properties in that suburb for the banks to work out a value. So I was pretty stuck. Didn't matter how much money I saved, unless I saved a full 20%, which was going to be tricky on just a single income. So what I had to do was I had to go back to the drawing boards and work out, you know, what could I do to this property to add the most amount of value and not spend not overcapitalized at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So did you end up doing any renovations or cosmetic changes to it or nothing?
Yes. Yeah, so with that property, I gave myself a budget of $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
And with that $5,000, I then done the tile. I tiled the whole house. I done new carpets to the bedrooms. And then I changed the blinds and then just done the fittings, like the light fittings, put new ones in there. And I managed to do that all for $5,000. I didn't touch the kitchen or the bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And what that done was it gave the house a whole new look, just enough, because then once I put it on the market, I then, I was able to get some interest from an interstate buyer.
So which year was that in, Nathan?
That was back in 2014.
Do you still hold this property or you've sold it now?
I sold it to then I got it to a point where I was able to sell it for $442,000. So I managed to get out with some profit. And then that was the profit that I used to then buy my next property.
Right. And which year did you sell this property in?
I sold it in 2016,
right. So 2 years later.
Two years.
So you purchased it for 400K, sold it for 442K. You spent about 5K on renovations. So you made a little bit of profit out of it, right?
Yes, correct.
Not a bad start at least.
It could have been a lot worse.
Yeah. A lot of lessons to be taken away by the sounds of it, really. I guess that's what it is. Don't buy the best house in one of the suburbs. Is that what you're
exactly.
one of
Yeah, don't buy the most expensive house in that suburb. But I guess there was another component to it that worked out in my favor. So I was able to live in the granny flat, had its own kitchen, bathroom, another bedroom, and I was able to my sister was staying in the front house. So we were paying down the debt a lot quicker.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's good.
Yeah, so that was another component that was actually ended up working well.
Sure.
What was the LVR that you went in with for this purchase?
The LVR was quite high. It was 90%.
90% because they're like, okay. Yeah, because it probably hasn't got a lot of deposit as well to cover, like, you know, most of that would be to go towards covering stamp duty plus a 10% deposit, isn't it? So,
correct. I was lucky because it was the first home.
Yeah.
So what next after that?
And I was able to pick myself up, take whatever money I made, and I started looking for another suburb. You know, and this time I wanted to make sure I didn't have the most expensive property in the suburb. I ended up going with a suburb called Holland Park. So the suburb has had a constant rise. So sort of even between then and now, it was in 2016, it was $607,000. That's when I purchased my property for $565,000. And now the medium house price is $725,000. And like I was now looking at, you know, what's the school catchments like? But there was a school catchment. And also another component I was looking at this time was the land. So I wasn't worrying too much about that actual house. So the house that's on it is an old two-bedroom post-war home. But I was more just focusing on the land this time. And then another component I was looking at when I went to go buy my next property was the demand. So I made it my goal to go to all the open homes in that suburb just to look at, you know, what sort of buyers are coming to the suburb, you know, and, you know, how many people are, like, calling up the agents after and saying how many people put offers on that property just to really narrow down on that suburb. And, yeah, that's when I did decide on Holland Park to be my next purchase.
Why specifically Holland Park? Brisbane is pretty big. Any particular reason you went to Holland Park?
It was the fact that I was just looking at the medium house price. I started going to the open homes in the surrounding suburbs like Mount Gravatt, Cooperoo, Camp Hill, and I just found that Holland Park was such a family orientated suburb. When you look across it, a lot of it has a lot of they call it character zoning in Brisbane. So a lot of the properties cannot be demolished. So it holds its value a lot better. There's not many apartments. There's not many townhouses. And I figured over the long run, this suburb's going to perform just due to its like proximity to the hospitals, its proximity to the CBD, and in Brisbane there's, and Holland Park specifically, there's multiple ways to get to the city, so there's not much congestion. So those are what helped me pick that as a suburb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So for those listeners who doesn't know, how far is Holland Park from the CBD? Is it about 12 kilometres, 14, within 15 kilometre ring?
It's about 10 kilometres from the
10. Okay. CBD, and as you, I think you already mentioned, what other amenities is in this suburb? You mentioned there's a hospital. You mentioned the Mount Gravatt shopping centre is close by.
Yeah, so there's a Garden City shopping centre. Yep. But a lot of what drives that suburb is the people that are purchasing the properties. Yep. They are mainly like doctors, CEOs, managers of businesses, and it's the brand new builds within that suburb will sell for 1.8 to 1.6 million. And then when you're buying a property for 560,000, it gives you a lot of room to kind of move.
Mm.
That was another factor. But
How did you find out that the buyers were like doctors and CEOs? How did you find out that information when you were an investor?
Yeah, it's just connecting with real estate agents.
Okay.
You know, when I went through an open home, I necessarily couldn't afford it, but I'd just say, hey, John, you know, I really enjoyed coming through your open home. I think the property's worth 1.2. Just thought I'd share that feedback. And then just sharing feedback. And then throughout the week, I'd say, hey, John, you know, what sort of buyers come through your property? And then, you know, gradually the agents would start to, you know, give me real advice. Yeah.
Without, so you build a rapport there. You build good rapport there with the agent, basically. Correct. And yeah, and they are able to, and they're willing to share that information with you, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's it.
So you mentioned that the median price of the house in that area was $607,000. And you purchased this one for $560,000, right?
Yes, correct.
And what year was that in?
That was in 2016.
So what's the value currently, roughly?
Roughly around $610,000.
Yeah. And the LVR on this property, is it high LVR or?
It's still quite high. Yeah, I'm still working on paying it down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough. That's cool. So that was the second property in the portfolio, but became the first one because you sold the first one. What happened next? So is this currently rented, obviously?
Yes, it's currently rented.
And what's the rent it's fetching?
It's rented for $400 per week.
And that would be... rent yield will be roughly about what, 3.5%?
Yeah, roughly. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's because it's inner CBD areas. It's the inner ring, and it's got higher probability of capital growth. That's why it's lower rent yield, I'm assuming.
Yeah, correct. I like that suburb, and I see it performing over the long term. So I'm happy to take a small kind of negative gearing.
What kind
just
of
for the
growth?
Meanwhile.
Yeah, sure. What kind of growth do you expect from this property over the next few years, Nathan? I mean, based on your research,
I could see it going up another. And this is another factor. It's the land in that suburb's now selling for $650,000 to $680,000. So I could see it going up another sort of 20% over the next 4 years.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
20% is good. Yeah, that's a decent.
What's the initial strategy of purchasing this property? Like what did you like about the property? I think you told us about the Holland Park, but, you know, what was this property that attracted your eyes and you think that's investment grade?
There was a couple of like angles I could attack it. I could do a large renovation.
Yep.
Because the bones of the property were solid.
Okay. So it's just a three-bedroom Queenslander. Sorry to cut you in.
Or I can knock it down and build a brand new home.
Okay. Yep.
I like that it's quite versatile in regards to, you know, which way I could angle it. And from like a development point of view as well, it was just sitting on the borders of where they're going to where you can subdivide a 600 square meter block into two. So it's literally right on the border of that. So I guess also hoping that they might extend that radius out, then that site will then become subdividable.
Right, okay. So it's got a few different X factors basically that that can lead to capital growth if the normal growth doesn't happen.
Yeah, so the goal of that would be to eventually knock down the house and build a brand new home, and then either live in it for a year to not get the capital gains tax, or just sell it.
That's
but you never want to sell.
Have you done any work to it to date, or since you purchased, or not really? Just let it go. Just let it keep going like that.
No, I did. I did do the. I spent $10,000 and I got the bathroom. I redone the bathroom.
Okay.
I resprayed all the kitchen cabinetry to have a two-pack finish. And then I pulled up all the carpet and got the floors sanded.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So cosmetic renovation, basically just what you've done with the Boronia Heights property.
Exactly. And that's what that then drove up the value of it. Okay. From a valuer's point of view, yep.
Nice. That's really good. So what's next in the portfolio? Have you purchased any property after that, or?
No, I'm pretty much stuck on that Holland Park property. Since then, I have then utilized my skill within my new business to help other people find property. Mm-hmm. But the next goal is to find a block of land that I can use that strategy, put a brand new build on it, and live
for a brand new build.
Yes, that'll be the next strategy.
And why is that?
Because that can be quite profitable in say Holland Park and Camp Hill. We have there's very low stock levels in Brisbane at the moment, and there's just a certain as you can tell, I love these suburbs, so I became a specialist. Yes. But there's a certain type of new build that you can do where it can cost you around $500,000. And if you can get the house for around $600,000, that combination, you would be able to sell the end product for 1.3 to 1.4. So the strategy would be, so I'm staying connected with agents, but I'm also doing other things like sending out letters to owners, keeping in contact with them to find this block of land, which is hard to find. But once I find it, the goal would be to find that, and also it would be a combination of working with some investment investor partners as well to help fund the deal.
Nice. That's really good. So that's cool. You've started building your portfolio and done pretty good so far. What is the Brisbane market looking like at this point in midst of this COVID situation, basically? What are you guys seeing?
So what I'm currently seeing is, we had that time where everybody was in lockdown, so it went quiet for a bit. But as soon as everybody was allowed to go back out to open homes, the market has actually skyrocketed. It started going back up. There's still a very large demand for families trying to get in Holland Park. There's other suburbs like Mansfield, and these suburbs are driven a lot by the school catchments.
Mm-hmm.
So the families can, if they're within these school catchments and they send their kids to these schools, say Cavendish, for example, 96% of the students finish with an OP score, and it's up there with a private school. And if they were to send their kids to a private school, that would be costing them nearly sort of $20,000 per kid. So if you've got three kids, you know, you're better off just getting into one of these suburbs. So that's why those suburbs I'm going to see, they're going to hold their value through this time. But then you've got the sort of outer ring suburbs, like out in maybe Logan or maybe like 30 kilometres out of the CBD, where it's driven a lot more by investors. I feel like they're probably going to cop it the most in regards to a lot of properties flooding the market.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just a very high demand in Brisbane.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Nathan, I've reversed engineer your age. You're roughly about 26 years old.
No, I'm 28.
28. Off by two.
Good try.
That's pretty good, mate, at that age. I think I remember 26 or 27 was when I got started in property, when I bought the first purchase, made the first purchase. So that's really good.
You've already done a few runs so far. So, I think despite the fact that
obviously I'm not going to let you work my – I'm not going to let you reverse engineer my age, though.
It's pretty open public information on that, Nathan, if you're interested. Yeah. But that's good. I guess where to from here for your portfolio? I know you're actively building your business at the moment. But let's say, for example, if you got the resources, if you got the cash, if you got the borrowing capacity, what would be your next investment property?
My next investment property would be more of a development aspect.
Okay.
Just to get more cash. But the property, the right answer for that one would be cash flow properties. Okay. Yeah.
What sort of development property?
Cash flow. For a development, for a cash deal, it would be more as low risk as possible. So as I was saying before, knock down a house and build a new house. That's it's very low risk. If you understand, you know, how to build the house, the style. Or the other aspect would be if I did have more cash and I'd be aiming for a buy and hold strategy. And that would be over near sort of Arana Hills or Fernie Grove, where you can purchase a property for, say, $450,000 and you can rent it out for $450 per week. They have been seeing a lot of growth at that end.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so basically you're looking at a buy, a demolish, and then build, sell type of strategy for your next for your next one to that degree. And you want to buy in inner rings, like the blue chip suburbs like Holland Park or those suburbs around it, and then essentially knock the house down. You can estimate this is your trade. You know exactly how much to estimate a property, so you'll be able to take care of most of that estimation yourself and work out the end profit to that degree, whether it's worth doing or not, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, but with the current Holland Park property that you currently have. Is the intention for you to keep that long term, or you'll also be looking at executing that strategy a few years down the track? Knock it down, sell off when the market's good.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. I really just want to hold it forever, to be honest. Okay. Yeah, the goal would just be to pay it down, rent it out, and just hold it. Because I see the land being more and more valuable over time. Yeah.
So in that case, then why would the next one be the flip type of strategy? That's the thing. I thought you want to keep as many as you can, right?
Yep. The next one would be a flip one because to do a project like that, your rental yield's going to be quite low. So it's more of just to capitalize on the cash, get the cash, and then invest it and properties that are going to cash flow, but they're going to go up still over the long term in high growth suburbs. Mm-hmm. But they're just going to cash flow a lot better.
Okay, gotcha. So it's kind of like the initial. You want to sell that because you want to have that initial war chest, and then essentially from that point onwards, you can accumulate maybe a few, looking at how you do, maybe a few kind of long term hold investment properties. Yeah, is that the right idea?
Yep.
Okay, no, it's good.
I've got a question. Within your circle of friends and the network, what's the vibe like in terms of investing in the property?
A lot of, I could just think of three off the top of my head, have purchased a home. But the thing is, they went with buying a brand new build. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, but it was the location they got it in. So as you know, there's sort of a 20% margin from the developer and 20% from the builder. So they're going to have the kind of lagging in capital growth. So you are right. A lot of people around my age are actually just going in from their home point of view. They're not seeing it as their first property, as their investment, as a stepping stone. Mm-hmm. And I guess there's that whole instant gratification sort of thing. Now they've got that really nice home, but they're going to be stuck. They're not going to be able to renovate it or anything like that. So, yeah, to answer your question, I don't have any friends that have bought an investment property as their first property.
Oh, look, and I think just to add to that as well, I don't think there's any right or wrong in terms of whether you should buy your owner occupy first or whether you should buy your investment first. Ultimately, you know, if you're someone that's like us living in Sydney and Melbourne who's, you know, like to buy your first home, it's a really stretching your finances to that degree, then certainly a lot of people will be reconsidering whether it's a viable option for them to go to that path. But if you're looking at a Brisbane, you know, I think Brisbane's still got a lot of affordable housing to that degree, you know, around the middle ring, outer ring, around a $500,000, $600,000 mark, you can still get a house. That's still very good. So that's why I can see that from Southeast Queensland perspective, it will make more sense for those people to own their home first, get their foot into the property and keep paying down that debt, a bit like what you're doing, Nathan. And then essentially they can use that as a leverage later on if they do want to continue build, or at least they got a home that eventually they're going to pay off in time anyway. So I think, yeah, different horses for different courses to that degree and different states. So yeah. But yeah, no, apart from that, I think I'm good.
Switching gears, Nathan and Robert, let's have fun.
Fun parts.
you can take the stress part out now. I can see you're stressed a little bit. So let's switch gears. Let's have fun. Aliens, believe it or not.
No. Don't believe it.
Universe is pretty big. There's so many galaxies out there, billions of planets. Not really?
Oh, the rabbit hole has jumped into.
No, that's cool. Yeah,
there's got to be something out there.
Yeah. Crypto, here to stay or a fad?
What was that?
Crypto, here to stay or a fad?
Cryptocurrency?
Yeah.
Oh, I actually think it's going to be a big thing. The way that they're printing money now, we haven't we still haven't seen the inflation from all this money being printed, so that'll be interesting to the property market.
Yeah, that's we're publishing an episode on that one in next week or two with John. Have a listen to that if you want to. He's mentioned some good stuff about that related to inflation. So do you think we are going down the path of hyperinflation?
Yeah, I think so. The money just hasn't made it to all of us smaller people yet. But once the money, you know, as David would know, the banks have a lot of money on their books. They're just not lending it out. But as that money starts to get into our economy and people start spending more, we'll probably start seeing inflation, which I think that's always been a positive for the property market. You know, the dollar's worth less, so you need to give them more to buy that property or that, you know, that tangible thing.
We probably should have asked, cut in, Nathan, three biggest lessons so far on your property journey. What are they?
The first one is, you know, before you negotiate a price on a property, do your research, see how long it's actually been sitting on the market for. That was one thing I didn't do. And
that was a Boronia hype property, right? You went in. Yeah. Did you sign a contract on the day, basically?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. I just go swimming,
buddy, in his hand.
Yeah, right.
Swimming pool was too clean, so we had to.
Yeah.
Okay, that's number one. Yep, awesome.
I guess that probably ties in with the number two. Would be, you know, don't get emotional.
Yep.
You know, that's that's one thing that caught me. I just let the emotions take over.
Mm-hmm.
And I think number three would be, do your research on the suburb that you want to purchase in. There's so many tools out there now. It could be as easy as just typing in the suburb and investment, come up on realestate.com with, you know, the medium house price, and you can visually see how it's been going on an annual basis. And then you can look at the property that you're purchasing. And for example, you know, that one that I got, you know, it was 400,000 and then the medium house was 355,000. That's quite a visual thing that'll get you thinking a bit more, and you probably start asking some other people for advice. So do some research on the suburb you're going to be purchasing in.
And always listen to Spark Your Fire podcast.
Now, that's some great advice there, Nathan. I'm sure it will help those first-timers, especially not to make the emotional mistake and like what you're doing. So, you know, leave their checkbooks at home, leave their for inspections, and don't sign anything until you've done your due diligence and research. And that was good. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks.
Super appreciate your time, Nathan. Thanks for coming on the show. To the listeners, hope you guys are enjoying the content.
If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.